When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Seeking Witchcraft. I'm your host, Ashley, and today I have on Lisa Campion. Lisa is a psychic counselor, Reiki master teacher, and bestselling author of The Art of Psychic Reiki and Energy Healing for Empaths. Welcome, Lisa, to the show.
Thanks, Ashley. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Oh, absolutely. I'm so excited to have you on today. We're going to be talking about Reiki. And I was just telling Lisa right before we started this episode that I really don't have a lot of knowledge in this topic. So I'm very excited to have her on to talk a little bit more about this.
It's one of my favorite topics.
Perfect. Well, I guess to start, could you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I have been working, this is a crazy thing, Ashley, but I've been working as a professional psychic since I was 19 years old.
Oh, that's amazing.
I know. And that was back in the 80s, by the way. So I started quite a long time ago and really had experienced life as a very, very psychic child, which back in the 60s and 70s when I was growing up was pretty weird. It wasn't like something that was like really okay to talk about. It was sort of, you know, there were no podcasts, no psychics on TV, no, you know, new age bookstores, no internet. Think about that. You know, there was not a lot. So I feel like I spent my childhood, of course, I grew up in a super haunted house. Like, you know how that goes. Murphy's Law, right? Put the psychic child in the
house. I've lived in a haunted house. I understand.
Yeah, it's just how it went for me. And so I feel like I spent my childhood trying to figure out like what was going on, like what's happening here. And also trying to pretend to be normal in public, you know, because it was so odd. It was so different from what other people were experiencing. And fortunately for me, my parents were hippies, and they kind of, you know, they didn't drag me to the church and throw holy water on me, but they were like, oh my God, you have such a good imagination. And so I really started, then it was the 80s and I was in college. It was the dawn of the new age. And I started working as a psychic at that point. And I quickly learned that I didn't have enough skill to really help people. So after I graduated from university, I went back to school and became a therapist. And for a long time, I blended intuition, psychic work, and therapy together. And then in 1999, I learned Reiki and added Reiki into the mix. And I think now I mostly write books and teach. I had a very busy private practice for a long time. Now I write books and teach, and I feel like my mission in life is to really work with emerging psychics, healers, and empaths, people who are, I might be a healer, I might be an empath. Oh gosh, I'm having some intuitive and psychic experiences and I need a little help with that. I love to mentor people and teach people and help people who are undergoing a psychic opening or a spiritual opening navigate that. Because when I did it, it was really hard. It was really rocky, really bumpy. And I kind of like thrashed my way around through that, you know, school hard knock style. And if I can help somebody else do it more gracefully than I did, that's a really good day for me.
Wow, that's quite an incredible background to have leading into where you are now with your practice and helping others. I can't imagine how hard that must have been growing up in the 80s and being psychic and not really having too many resources to reach out to really figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
So it's cool that over your life, you were able to kind of figure out a way to help others with this as well.
Yes. Yes. That's what I really like to do.
Amazing. Well, let's jump into the topic of Reiki. So for those who are completely new or have never heard about it, what exactly is this and how does it work?
Reiki is a really gentle but powerful hands-on energy healing technique from Japan. So you might think about it as acupuncture without needles. This sometimes described that way. And what happens is the Reiki practitioner learns how to access universal life force energy, which is what Reiki means in Japanese. Reiki means universal life force energy. And the practitioners learn how to channel that into their clients, into their patients. And it brings about, you know, balance into our system. It's used for relaxation, for pain relief, for help with anxiety and depression, and sort of works with us on, you know, our physical body, our emotions, our mind. And when I learned Reiki in 1999. That was 26 years ago. And back when I learned it, it was pretty fringe. It was still kind of a weird thing to do. I continue to do weird things that other people aren't doing. But nowadays, it's so much more mainstream. So right now, there's 800 hospitals in the United States that have full-time Reiki staff as part of their complementary and alternative medicine units. And in New England, where I live in Boston, all the big hospitals have Reiki, full-time Reiki staff. You know, they use it pre and post-surgery. It's used in pain clinics to treat pain non-narcotically. If you have cancer and you go to Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, which is arguably one of the best cancer hospitals in the world, you can receive chemo. While you're receiving your chemo treatments, you can have a Reiki practitioner who's going to give you Reiki during that session to support you. And they have done a lot of studies that say, you know, it helps mitigate, you know, the side effects of chemo quite a bit. So it's really gone a long way from being this kind of fringe, weird thing, new agey thing that people were sort of hush hush about, to being really much more well known, mainstream, and popular.
Yeah, I know. I've even seen Reiki offered at places that offer massage therapy.
Yep.
Just like my local spa has it. And it's interesting to see, like, my local spa has it, but then I know some people within my friend circle who also have certifications in this. So it's cool to see how expansive it is and how it's in places you wouldn't necessarily expect it to be in as a more alternative form of therapy, I guess I should say, or healing would probably be more appropriate. I did not know that about Dana-Farber, though. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So many big hospitals now use it. People want it. And actually, one of my students was the lead Reiki person at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. And she said, you know, you can call them up and they'll come onto the floor to work on you. But as soon as they get on the floor, it's like the nurses, the doctors all want Reiki. So she's like, it'll take me an hour to get there because I gotta give Reiki to the staff before I get to the patient. And which I also think that's really cool.
That's awesome. So I guess I should ask, though, what does a Reiki session look like? And I know, like, I've heard of people doing, like, distance healing over the phone. Like, what could somebody expect if they're going to be getting a Reiki session for the first time?
If you are going to an in-person session, then your practitioner will have, like, a massage table in their office. And so you lie on the table. You don't get undressed. It's done right through the clothes. And the practitioner may actually touch you, or sometimes it's done without touching the person, so the person will hover their hands over you. In general, it's done from the head down, so they might start on your head and then work down your body, and they might stay at a certain point in your body for a couple of minutes or longer. Usually they're waiting to see if they can feel the energy shift. You're going to experience really deep relaxation. Sometimes people just sort of close their eyes and drool, like you do when a really good massage. Sometimes you have energetic changes, like, or emotional, you know, might cry. I always say men fall asleep. Women cry and men fall asleep.
There's something poetic about that.
I don't know what's up there. Men are exhausted and women have, like, all these emotions that they need to release. So some Reiki practitioners will talk it through, like, oh, are you having some feelings? Do you want to talk about it? Some will just be quiet and leave you alone, you know, to process your things. And it can be done, you know, in person. And then it can also be done remotely. So especially during the pandemic, like before the pandemic, everyone was more focusing on in-person sessions. But once the pandemic happened, nobody was doing in-person sessions. Everybody had to switch their practice to long distance sessions. And it's just as powerful. It's just as effective to do it long distance. In that case, you might, like, lie down on your own bed. Like, the practitioner will call you or or Zoom with you, and they'll be like, lie down, get comfortable. And sometimes the Zoom light, like when I do that, I keep the Zoom line open so I can see the person and I'm there in case they need me, if they want to say anything or I'm noticing something. And then the session proceeds. You know, the practitioner sometimes uses a proxy, like a little doll or something they're putting their hands on as if you were there. Yeah.
So what does it mean if somebody says there are like different levels of Reiki practitioner?
Reiki has three different levels. It's just kind of like different levels of expertise that you go through. In the first level of Reiki, it's really focused on self-healing. So the techniques are for self. I think it's amazing to have a self-healing practice. Like Reiki is one of the few energy healing modalities that I've ever learned that teaches you to work on yourself. Isn't that cool? I mean, you can learn Reiki either right away. You can do hand positions on yourself to give yourself Reiki. I think that's so beautiful.
I love that. It's kind of like you can't pour from an empty cup, you know?
That's right. Totally. So Reiki level one, the focus is on working yourself, on yourself, working on your friends, your family, your pets, your plants, your food, kind of, you know. And I teach what I call kitchen table Reiki, which is like your best friend comes over and they're crying and they're sitting at your kitchen table. And now that you know Reiki, you can put your hand, you can stand behind them when they're sitting in a chair and put your hands on their shoulders, or put your hands on their heart, or, you know, we're a lot of times at Reiki one, we're not always working with somebody who has a massage table. Maybe we don't even have a massage table, right? So we learn to do the positions on other people when they're sitting in a chair, which is super handy. And Reiki level two is considered the practitioner's level. So that's when you can call yourself a Reiki practitioner. That's where you learn long distance healing. There are Reiki symbols that we learn at level two that sort of focus the Reiki energy on like in a particular way, like physical healing, mental healing, emotional healing. And then Reiki three, which is sometimes also called the master level, you learn to teach Reiki, to give other people, you know, to attune other people to Reiki. There's something called the attunement, which that's the process that the Reiki teacher passes the ability to do Reiki to the student. And that is done through using some of the Reiki symbols and breathing techniques to open up and permanently change your energy field in a way that allows you to connect with this universal life force energy.
Oh, that's so fascinating. Can I ask, like, I guess there's probably not a one size fits all, but is there like a typical time frame for moving through the different stages of training? Or is it, I don't know, if somebody's really gifted, they can move through faster? Or is it just more like a dedication type thing? Or
it really varies between the teacher and the school that you're studying with. So kind of old school Reiki, traditional Reiki training, they'll say, well, you have to have a year between each level. And, you know, you have to certain number of practice hours, right? So that you can say, you did them, you know. The way I taught Reiki was a little different. And I've done, I don't know, well over 1,000, probably a couple thousand, trained that many people. And the way that I did it was sort of allowing the student to choose their own pace. Sometimes I would work with people who, like, all they wanted was Reiki one, and that's as far as they went, and that was good. They were just wanted to work on their kids or, you know, their pets. And then I've met other people that were just really on a mission. They're like, they weren't kidding around, and they wanted it quickly. And they would do like Reiki one month, Reiki two the next month, Reiki three the month after that.
Oh wow, that's pretty fast.
Yeah, that's pretty fast. I don't recommend learning it faster than that, because each level is pretty life-changing. Each level like upshifts your energy, like your frequency, you know, you level up. And we need a little time to adjust to like raising our frequency. So I think we need a minimum of a month between levels is good.
It's interesting to hear you talking about that, because I'm part of a witchcraft tradition that has 3 degrees, and we typically recommend a certain amount of time between each degree, but there are certainly people out there who've gotten all 3 degrees in a very very accelerated time frame.
Yeah.
And so yeah. I'm hearing some similarities here of what you're saying versus what I've heard and experienced.
That's cool. Yeah, I know. Three levels is kind of typical for sort of universal, I think, for mystery schools, occult schools, witchcraft schools, healing schools. Like, it's so often the case that there are three levels. And for me, like, I just trust the innate wisdom of my students. Like, I'm not going to tell you what to do. I'm going to trust that you know what to do, you know, and that's more important. And that it does go against sort of more traditionalists, you know. Some people are more, you know, formal with their Reiki training and more, you know, structured, have more rules. For me, it's, and I do sort of a weird version of Reiki that I call psychic Reiki, because I worked as a psychic and I was doing psychic development. And for many, many years, I was teaching Reiki classes and teaching psychic development classes at the same time. And I would just notice my people would take both. They would take all my Reiki classes, they would take all my psychic classes, and they'd be like, okay, that's really a good combination. And in the Reiki training, I would say yoga, Reiki, and meditation, and we can say witchcraft too, are the sort of gateways, the three gateways into the spiritual like journey, right? So many people get started on their spiritual awakening because they took yoga, because they started meditating, because they got an interest in the tarot cards, because they took a Reiki class or got some Reiki. Those are tend to be gateways that open us to this larger spiritual world. And when we do that, when we do any of those things, it tends to pop open our psychic ability, our intuitive ability, our, you know, our sensitivity as empaths. And Reiki in particular, especially Reiki level two, the attunement, well, really, whatever psychic gifts you have really opens them, you know, very powerfully. And so for me, I'm like, well, that seems like a really good pairing, because as healers, don't we want to add in our intuitive ability, add in our psychic hits as part of our toolkit so we can help our clients like even more, you know? And it's not part of the traditional Reiki canon. It's sort of outside of traditional Reiki. So when I wrote the book, The Art of Psychic Reiki, it came out in 2018, it was a little radical. People, and I had students come to me and say, well, I started doing Reiki and it popped open my psychic, and I went to my Reiki teacher and they told me they didn't know what to do, or they told me to cut it out. Like, they were like, that's not part of Reiki. Stop doing that. We don't know, you know, that's weird. You know, we don't know what that is. And to me, I felt that was sad in a way. I was like, oh, that's kind of a missed opportunity, because when we combine Reiki with our intuition and our psychic ability, we just become better healers. So I started blending them together, and that's what I call psychic Reiki.
I definitely have more questions about that. And I want to talk about psychic practice with Reiki, but we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Okay, welcome back. So I wanted to ask, so is Reiki something that can be learned by anybody, or should somebody, or do they need to have some sort of gift or intuitive practice in order to really understand or start practicing this?
I think anyone can learn it. And I've taught little kids, I've taught teenagers, I've taught people of all ages, men, women, firefighters, policemen, doctors, you know, housewives. I really think anyone can learn Reiki. And that, in a way, that's one of the miracles of Reiki. It's also quite quick and easy to learn. So it's not like if you want to go to acupuncture school, that's like 3 or 4 years, you know, or massage school, you know, there's some like, or therapy school, there's some real investment in time. But Reiki level one can be done in a weekend. My online Reiki one training is like 16 hours of training. So we, and the, like, I remember when I was, my kids were little, my son's little friend had leukemia and they were 5 years old. And I was distraught, as we all were. And I went to the hospital and I'm like, what can I do here? And I taught his mother Reiki level one in about half an hour. I didn't have much time. She didn't have much time. I didn't have much time. I was like, it was like a quick and dirty Reiki one. Here's the attunement. Here's where to put your hands on yourself. Here's where to put your hands on your kid. And I left. And when I came back a couple of days later, she was doing Reiki on herself, on her kid, on the other kid in the room, on the parents of the other kid in the room, on the nurses when they were walking through. And, you know, it was just like this incredible Reiki fest. And to me, that's a miracle. Like, you know, she felt so empowered and to have something she could do. And it really was effective. Her kid was feeling better. And she was feeling better. And the kid and the other kid in the room was feeling better. And that's a miracle to me that, you know, half an hour of training that I could give her this skill, this gift that could help in a situation like that. She didn't have time to go to 3 years of acupuncture school. She needed it right there.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Now, I guess kind of in the same vein of topic or conversation, do you think that anyone could develop psychic abilities even if they don't feel like they have the gift for it?
Yeah, I really think so. So I wrote a book called Awakening Your Psychic Abilities, and I really think it's because I see psychic as an ability, like musical ability, like athletic ability. Everybody's got some, you know, and whatever you have, I mean, maybe you have like a lot, maybe you have a little, but everybody's got some. And whatever you have, we still have to work it. Like, we look at professional athletes, professional musicians, and we know they practiced, they trained, they studied. And psychic abilities like that, I think we have to sort of let go of this illusion when, you know, when we look at professional psychics, like somehow they didn't work it. They didn't, they did. They still do. I still do, you know, just like we don't, when we see a professional musician, we know how much hard work they put in to get there. And psychic is really the same thing. It's like a muscle. And when you start flexing and exercising that muscle, practicing, learning, studying, I think we have to know some things. You have to know, kind of like witchcraft too, right? You have to know some stuff. Like, there's a certain knowledge set that comes with that. So there's a knowledge that we have to have, and then there's practice we have to do to kind of develop that muscle. But I think absolutely everybody has this. I don't think we would have survived as humans without it. It feels like such a natural, normal part of our birthright as human beings.
I believe the same thing too. I hear people say that they have trouble picking up energy, or they don't think that they're psychic. They've never had deja vu in their life. But I give this one example that a lot of people are like, oh, I've had that happen before, where if you walk into a room and you could tell like something's off, and then you find out like there was an argument that just happened there, or maybe somebody just had a really exciting proposal there, or like something energetically happened in that space recently. And when you walk in, you could just feel like, oh, something happened here. And you kind of start asking around, and that's how you find out. That I think that's one way people just tap into energy naturally without ever really thinking about it. People do that all the time. You know, the hairs on the back of your neck stand up when you go into something and you're just like, I don't know why I'm feeling this way. You know, I think people are a little bit more tuned in to the world than sometimes we like to give ourselves credit for.
Sure. And we're used to seeing like psychics on TV, or God forbid, the psychics in horror movies. Like, that doesn't end well. I always feel so bad for the poor psychic in the horror movie, you know? And so we think it's going to be this big dramatic thing. And really, it's like that little, your examples were awesome. And it's like that little voice in your head that whispers like, don't forget your lunch, or take the back road today because the highway's all backed up, or, you know, I don't have a good feeling about that. You know, those are very common, or how we feel when we first meet somebody. For the first impression is often a very psychic experience. Maybe you can tell when like a minute before the phone rings that it's going to ring. And not only that, but it's your mother. How do you know it's your mother? The phone isn't even rung yet. You know, like these kinds of things, like, oh, my mom's about to call, ding, you know, those are very common. It's so common. It's so much more simple, and it's so much more than seeing things. So a lot of times when I do psychic development stuff, people say, well, I didn't see anything. And I'll be like, well, what did you perceive? What did you experience? And, well, I felt this and I knew this and I had this inner knowing of that. And I felt this thing in my body and I could hear a voice in my head, right? So when we open ourselves to all of our psychic senses, not just the seeing one is the most rare. So in what do we perceive? What do we experience? We can tap into all of the psychic senses that are available to us.
It was fun hearing your examples because you just reminded me right before we got on this call, I had a friend message me saying that they were bringing some cinnamon rolls. They're coming to visit over the weekend and they're coming tomorrow night and they're driving in from a couple states away. And they were like, oh, I picked up some cinnamon rolls for us. And I messaged them back and I'm just like, you psychic person, because when I was at the store 2 days ago, I was walking by the refrigerated section and I saw a roll or like one of those, like, you know, those aluminum little roll things of the cinnamon rolls that you just like pop in the oven. I have never bought this before. I don't even really like cinnamon rolls, but something in my head was like, I should get cinnamon rolls for my guests coming this weekend. And so like I ended up buying them. And then today they tell me I'm bringing cinnamon rolls. I was like, no freaking way. We were definitely tuned in right there.
You're dialed into the cinnamon roll channel.
Apparently. So their response was, we're going to have plenty of cinnamon rolls for this weekend. So I was like, all right.
That's so cool. That's a great example.
Anyway. Just fun little tidbit. So you've written about energy healing. So how could Reiki help people who are a little bit more sensitive energetically? How can it help these people protect and recharge their energy?
Well, I think like I also work a lot with empaths, and I wrote a book called Energy Healing for Empaths. And one of the first things when I work with empaths, one of the first things I tell them to do is learn Reiki. And I think it's because we focus a lot on energy management fundamentals, so energetic hygiene. And all sensitive people really need to learn how to clear their energy, how to be grounded, be fully in their body, be inside sort of a protective bubble. And the more sensitive we are, the more we need that energy hygiene, the more we open psychically, we need a little psychic self-defense, you know? And when we learn Reiki, it just gives us a language, a tool set, really solid techniques for helping us keep our energy hygiene up, you know, keeping ourselves energetically clear. What if you're an empath or a sensitive and you, God forbid, go into Walmart, what happens, right? I don't know about you, but 20 minutes in, I'm like, feel like curling up in the fetal position in the back of Walmart. And I'm like, I can't remember my name or where I parked my car, you know? And so energy hygiene is like, okay, so I'm going to get grounded. I'm going to clear the energy I picked up that's not mine. I'm going to get everything on my list. I'm going to get home. I'm okay, you know? And I think as the more sensitive we are, the more we open, the more we need those fundamentals. And Reiki is a great part of that.
Are there any like simple Reiki practices or techniques that somebody could try at home for stress or anxiety relief?
Well, you know, there are some energy healing things you can do, but it's not Reiki. It's not Reiki unless you receive the attunement.
That's fair.
You know? Yeah. So you have to, you know, at least get the attunement process. Otherwise, we're kind of just using our own energy, which is fine. That's fair to do that. But unless you have the attunement, it's not Reiki.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So we touched a little bit upon your book, The Energy Healing for Empaths. I wanted to ask about your book, The Art of Psychic Reiki. What's the takeaway that listeners could get from that book if they were to check it out?
I think it would be a great start for people if you're curious about what Reiki is. Really covering Reiki Level 1 and Reiki Level 2, kind of giving you the fundamentals, like, well, what is it exactly? And then blending in some of the things we already talked about, like, well, in Reiki Level 1, we're focusing on those, am I an empath? How do I know? We're focusing on those energy hygiene practices, grounding, clearing, and protecting yourself. In Reiki 2, we're talking more about the ethics of Reiki and how and when to send it and when not to, what the Reiki symbols are, and working with the psychic senses, which we talked about a little bit, you know? So I think it gives, if you already are a Reiki practitioner, it's going to blend in the psychic stuff for you. And if you're curious about Reiki and want to learn more about it, you know, it would give you a pretty solid footing on understanding what it is. A lot of people who read my book said they studied Reiki with other people and then they really enjoy the other things that I blend into. Like, I'm going to talk about chakras a little bit. I'm going to talk about, you know, who are your Reiki guides? You know, so what are spirit guides and why what does everybody really have them, and how do we communicate with them, and how does that all work? So I think it's a great entry point into this whole conversation.
You bring up ethics. I probably should have asked this earlier, but if somebody is interested and they feel a calling to learn Reiki, who should they, or like, what should they look out for when choosing a teacher? Are there any like red flags somebody could look out for, or any recommendations?
Yeah, I think getting somebody that has some experience is really important. So I think getting referrals and recommendations, a lot of times it's word of mouth. You know, like who's the best Reiki person in town? You kind of, you know, who's the best Reiki teacher in town? And I think there's so many different Reiki styles. I don't know, there's something like over 200 the last time I checked. And I think it's so much less about the style than it is about the teacher. Just like there's a million different styles of yoga, you know, but the yoga class you go back to over and over again is because you feel resonance with the teacher. You like that teacher. So get a teacher you resonate with, make sure that they're reputable, that they have some good resources. I would say make sure it's not their very first day, you know, unless you want to help them out as a guinea pig, but you know, make sure they have some experience, and check the pricing to make sure that it's sort of reasonable and in line with what other people are doing. Yeah, I think that's what you should do.
You know, now that you say that, I'm thinking about all the Reiki business cards I've seen at like my local metaphysical shop. So that'd probably be a good place to check out like any bulletin board they might have.
That's right. And you could ask like yoga studios, like if you go into the metaphysical shop and or the healing center or the yoga studio, like who's the best Reiki practitioner in town? Who's the best Reiki teacher in town? And they'll tell you, they know, you know, study with this person. And that's where I would start.
It's all pretty intertwined.
Yeah.
Well, Lisa, thank you so much for coming on and talking about Reiki and really educating both myself and the listeners about this topic, because it is something I wanted to know a little bit more about. On that note, how can the listeners connect with you or learn more about your books or your sessions or just get in contact with you?
Yeah, definitely do. My website, lisacampion.com, is a place to go. And I do teach online Reiki classes. So if you are interested in psychic Reiki, I've got them all online. I also have a YouTube channel that's just full of lots of free stuff and guided meditations and some of the energy management practices we talked about. And I have my own podcast called The Miracle of Healing, where you can check out some more cool stuff. But the website, I think, is where it's all at. And I'd love it if you would come by and leave me an email, tell me how your journey's unfolding. And I'd just love to hear from people. So that's where to go.
Awesome. I will put a link to your website in the episode description, as well as the three books that we touched upon today. And if anybody's interested in connecting with me, you can find me on Instagram at Seeking Witchcraft, on Facebook as Seeking Witchcraft Podcast. And if you're interested in supporting the show, you could do so at patreon.com/seekingwitchcraft. Lisa, I have one last question for you before you go. And that is something I ask everybody at the end of every episode. And that is, if you could give a brand new beginner in the world of the metaphysical one piece of advice, and it doesn't have to be about anything we talked about today, what would that piece of advice be?
I would say follow your intuition in your spiritual journey. So a lot of times we get a hunch or a nudge or like a craving for something that is going to show us our path. So when we step out onto that path, those signs and omens, hunches and nudges can really be like amazing breadcrumbs to follow when we're first opening up.
Pretty sound advice. I agree. All right. Well, thank you, Lisa, again so much for coming on. And thank you to everybody for listening. And we'll talk to you later. Bye.